You're listening to the All About Symbian Insight number 153 podcast. You're also listening to the All About Mego number 6 podcast. If you don't want to know the answer, cover your ears for the next 10 seconds. Welcome to a happy new bright dawn of millions of devices, hundreds of thousands of fans, network support, advertising budgets, and marketing coming out of your ears. Welcome back. It's been a difficult day, a trying session, and we're here in a mix of a wake and a party, and it is fair to say that we have
woohoo, seen... party!
Thank you very much there, Rafe, doing his best Beavis and Butthead. There we go. As I said, we weren't quite sure if today was going to be a wake, the end of the beginning of the end, the start of the beginning, or if you're George Lucas, episode one. Yes! Right then. Okay, so I'm Ewan Spence. If you're listening to the All About Symbian Insight podcast, you will know me. If it's All About Mego, hi, I'm the Mad Scotsman that the occasionally let me have a device, but nothing else. Joining me to talk about Nokia's new strategy for Symbian, for Mego, for questions from all of you out there on Twitter, on the website, through comments and everything, and for our own personal reactions to the news from Nokia's announcements and the markets day and whatever they've decided to name it now. Hello. I'm joined by the three people that I'd love to discuss this sort of news with. They are the man who plays the check, Rafe Blanford.
Hello, everybody.
There is the man who's waiting for the check, David Gilson.
Hello, everyone.
And there's a man that is going, check, what is this check thing? I've got Tuppence Halfpenny here that I can rub together. What do you mean, paper money? Steve Litchfield.
That does sound like me, doesn't it? Hello, everyone.
It does, yes. As I said, there is only really one news story today. It covers both of the sites and the podcasts that we do, so we've brought it all smashed together, mostly because Rafe's got to get on the plane to MWC in about 57 minutes, so this could make this recording quite challenging. Steve, I know you've been monitoring the emails and the press releases. As they would say in Dragnet, just the facts, Steve. The facts.
I'll give you the opening paragraph, then you can tell me what you'd like to hear further. Basically, Nokia has, quote, announced its new strategic direction, changes in leadership and operational structure. Basically, what it means is that they have changed the way they're going to approach the different mobile platforms. They've added Windows Phone 7 for high-end devices with a high-profile announcement. You probably saw the photos around on our story and around the web of Stephen Elop and Steve Ballmer shaking hands. Symbian is apparently going to become a, quote, franchise platform, leveraging previous investments to harvest additional value. And Mego is apparently going to become open source. Well, I always thought it was already open source, and perhaps David can expand on that a bit later in the podcast.
Right then. So obviously we've got a couple of issues there. Rafe, of course, was there in the room. Rafe, let me come to you briefly first before we dive into those news stories in depth. This is a big announcement for Nokia. It's a historic day. Elop, of course, has been CEO for about two quarters now. You were there in the room. What was the sort of feeling in the room when he actually came out and said, you know what, Nokia, Microsoft, BFF?
Well, by the time that he actually stepped onto stage, the press releases had already gone out, but there'd been a great deal of discussion beforehand. And quite frankly, there was a lot of surprise, you know, some ranging from people who, you know, had a clue of what was coming, but didn't really quite realize how far it was going, to those who were, you know, really quite taken aback. I mean, some analysts had, you know, predicted it was going to be a continuation of Symbian Amigo with execution changes. Others had predicted an adoption. I'm not sure very many people at all called the idea that Windows Phone would so rapidly become Nokia's primary smartphone platform. There's a lot of important detail that we'll have to get to that explains, you know, in a bit more depth what's going to happen. But once the announcements then got made, actually, I think on the whole, the reaction from media and analysts was pretty positive in terms of, you know, this is, you know, a good direction for Nokia to be going in. But there were also a lot of questions. And, you know, the attention, you know, being the sort of fickle thing that it is, immediately started to turning to, you know, this transition period that there will be and how well that Nokia and Microsoft are going to be able to execute on this. So it was unusual. There was a real background hum, which I haven't heard at a Nokia event for a while. You know, the whole mobile world was focused on that room for a few hours. And in that sense, you know, Nokia was coming right back to the center of the conversation, the mobile industry. So yes, there was a palpable sense of sort of anticipation and eagerness to hear what the detailed plans were.
Okay, one more question before we go into the granularity then. Why all in? Why has Stephen Elop decided that, you know, Windows Phone 7, that's it. That's the primary platform. We're going to play around with the edges of Mego and Symbian, but we are for want of a better term, betting the company on this. Surely there's a line of argument that you go, well, we're just going to adopt this for the high end. We're still running Symbian. We're still running Mego. I mean, the technical answer would be to stay with Symbian and other operating systems. Why is he needed to do this massive effort? Is it actually because he is this infamous mythical Trojan horse that managed to sneak into Nokia, or is there a more businessy reason for it?
Well, while I rather like the image of a wooden Stephen Elop on wheels, it's rather ridiculous to suggest that. It's just not the way things work. I think there's two key ingredients here, and one of which Elop said, and I think this is quite right, that Nokia needed a simple and elegant strategy. As soon as you start mixing things together, it gets more complicated and there's more possibilities where you overlap, you go wrong, it costs more. And so it was always going to be a case of, I think, you know, in retrospect, it's easy for me to say, in retrospect, I should say, there were two options facing Nokia, one of which was to continue completely on their own, and that was essentially the Symbian and the Mego option, continue that forward, evolve both those platforms, change the execution. If you decide that you can't succeed with that particular approach, i.e. doing everything yourself, the question then becomes, who do you partner with to give yourself a better chance of success? And in the mobile world, that's a relatively small list to choose from, really two companies, one Microsoft, two Google. And they, you know, Stephen Elop was at Pernst to say they approached Google, they had conversation with them. But ultimately, the issue with Google was one of not being able to differentiate enough, not being able to extract enough value. That means that you know, if they'd chosen the Android route, Nokia would have been in danger of becoming just a commodity box company, not dissimilar to somewhere like Dell in the PC world. And I think there's probably also an element of Google are in a strong position, and there's a certain amount of arrogance around what they're doing. And I imagine that Nokia was able to get a better deal from Microsoft, and certainly in some of the details that emerged later on, I think that was apparent. So that's the kind of the all or nothing approach. And if you're going to sort of bet the farm on that kind of partnership, you need to go for it full tilt as quickly as possible. And so, you know, in hindsight, I do think those were the only two realistic options. And if you're deciding that you can't do it yourself, and I think this debate, could Nokia have done it on their own? Could they have evolved Symbian Amigo and made a go of it? Well, or you know, did they have to partner with someone else? Well, run and run. But it's not just as simple as saying this is a technical argument. Personally, I feel that from a technical point of view, it could have continued with Symbian and Amigo, certainly up until a year ago, 6 months. Now it's getting borderline, but technically I think I'll sit my neck out and say it would have been still possible. However, the reaction of the market, particularly analysts, also media, but all operators and other partners, may not have had the patience for Nokia to continue to do things their own way. And certainly based on the track record that they've had with both Symbian, and I think particularly in this instance, perhaps getting Mego ready in time, things weren't exactly good in track record terms. And so we'll discuss this later on. What they get with Microsoft is a partner who I think is very complementary in many ways. It doesn't mean there's not a, you know, great deal of you know, disruption and sadness. And from a personal point of view, you know, I followed Symbian for a long time. It was sad to see there, you know, we can see its end point on the horizon now. So it was a momentous day in many ways.
Would it be fair to say, with a very quick answer, because I know that Steve and David want to get in some issues as well, that because of the mistakes that OPK made previously, the markets wouldn't let Nokia have another 9 months on their own? They had, the markets basically said, look, either get a partner or be downgraded in the credit terms.
Yeah, it's always dangerous to simplify it to that kind of simple level. But yes, if you look at things like the credit ratings from Moody's and others, they were being reduced now, not in 9 months' time. And so that's a problem now, and that had to be addressed. And in that sense, that's what today was about.
So how much time do you think this buys them?
That's more difficult to say, because this isn't going to be a sudden switchover. This is a gradual transition process. But I would have thought we will need to see signs of transition. And what I really mean by that is devices coming out, or at least clear indications things are going well by the end of the year. But I think 2012 will probably be the make or break year, and by then we'll have a good idea about how things are going. But of course, it's probably going to be into 2013 before this is complete.
Okay, so Steve, I'm going to get you to come in on this one now, so, because I know you've been following this part of the story quite well. Windows Phone, and they've always said Windows Phone, not Windows Phone 7. I suspect that's a small thing, but the devil is always
very deliberate.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. They're not going to have Windows phones in any mass numbers until after MWC next year, let's be honest. They may well have a run of phones at the late of Q4 this year. They've got at least 9 months of products still in the line. And that is Symbian, isn't it?
Yes, it is. The quote that was interested me in the original press release today was that it was Symbian is to become a franchise platform, at which point we all scratched our heads and thought, what the heck is a franchise platform? Does that mean they're going to wait for other manufacturers to come in and build Symbian devices? No. They then clarified in various ways, levering previous investments to harvest additional value. What they're saying is that they've got this platform. It's fairly mature now. Symbian 3 is only a few months away from being pretty well, much well rounded out. S65th edition is pretty mature in terms of the low-end touchscreen phones. And they're basically going to carry on selling those, carry on releasing new models. That was one thing that was specifically said by a Nokia spokesperson this morning, saying we will continue to modernize the Symbian experience with a selective program of enhancements. It basically means they're going to bring out updates still, so that web browser and QWERTY portrait QWERTY keyboard and various other bits and pieces will probably still arrive. And specifically, the spokesman said, we will also launch more devices on the Symbian platform. They also said in the press release that Nokia is still aiming to sell, quote, another 150 million Symbian devices over the next few years. Now, that compares to they sold just over 100 million in 2010. Allowing for a certain ramp down because of the loss of momentum by saying that basically Symbian's going to be end of life in a few years' time, I would expect that 150 million to last maybe 2 or 3 years. So we're looking to about 2013, maybe into 2014 before the last Symbian-powered devices are sold. So I guess that my takeaway, I'm personally obviously very disappointed. I've grown up with Symbian like Rafa, perhaps even longer than him, and this really is the end of an era. I can see all sorts of pros and cons for what can happen from here on in, and we've all got our plans and feelings, and that will come out in our opinions and editorials and insights over the next few weeks. But in the very short term, what it means for Symbian is that in theory things can carry on despite Nokia's professed a sort of lack of long-term plans for it.
I suppose there's there's a lot of details there, and I know that there was more than just that one streamed press conference that we had with Steve Neal at Brave. I'm guessing that you managed to pin down a couple of the Nokia execs and got some more details on Symbian plans in the medium term for 2011.
Yes, I did. I mean, in terms of details, there weren't actually any specific pronouncements, but it was made quite clear that there would be a continuation of these Symbian 3 updates, and you can read into that effectively PR2 and PR3.0. They're still on the roadmap, so and they're going. What they mean by sort of a franchise platform is effectively what they're doing now is stopping development of future versions of the platform, and so there may well be one more hardware platform to come. That's not entirely clear yet. And what I mean by that is a sort of family of devices. And after that, they will sort of cease development. So in terms of things like the kernel, they'll be starting to shut down development of that and other internals. But in terms of things on the UX layer, there'll still be development in that for the next 10 years. And the effect of that is to massively cut the R&D spending on Symbian over the next 2 years. In 3 years' time, it will probably be getting to, near zero levels. It may take a little longer than that, depending on, as Steve was saying, how the devices play out. And so I think it's very important to realize that you're going to hear a lot of people saying Symbian is dead, and that is completely untrue. What we're seeing is a timeline for the discontinuation of Symbian, and clearly there is a bit of being picky on details here, but no, I think it's important to realize there is a difference. And Steve mentioned the 150 million device number. Just to put that in context, that's three times as many devices as BlackBerry shipped in 2010, roughly speaking. And that's a massive market opportunity on its own. And so I think it's sort of important to realize that Symbian is still going to play a very important role, particularly this year, but also into 2012. And so I think it's rather premature to announce the death of it. In fact, this is one point that you can make about the whole event. is actually this is, you know, about the future. This isn't affecting consumers or device sales immediately. Indeed, you know, there will perhaps be something by the end of the year, and certainly in 2012, that's when they start expecting to ship in volumes. I mean, Stephen Elop said there will be a range of devices at various price points by then, but particularly in the lower part, you know, the mid-tier, you know, Symbian will stick around. And so I think it's important to realize that, you know, whether you're a consumer or whether you're a developer, the death of Symbian did not happen today, and that's critical
reports,
in understanding
reports of
this.
The death of Symbian are greatly exaggerated. Where have I heard that before? But of course, it isn't just Symbian we're talking about here, and it wasn't just Symbian that we're talking about of existing Nokia operating systems as well. Their joint project with Intel, Migo, was also kind of lurking in the shadows today and just, you know, checking its clock and seeing if there's a scythe behind it. David, I know you've been looking at that, and of course, the All About Migo podcast, a regular contributor there. What do we learn about Migo today?
Right. Well, first of all, it, like with Symbian, it, reports of its demise are greatly exaggerated. I found it interesting what Nokia was saying about Migo. It's that there are things I would like to see more clarification on, and we will see in time. They're still saying they're going to get a device out this year because they want Nokia now want to use Migo to explore and learn and disrupt the market. So we will see what that means. Although it sounds to me very much like what they were doing with MIMO all the while ago, which was just an experimental platform. Whether or not Nokia are going to be as enthusiastic behind Migo as they were planning to be is yet to be seen, because, as I said, they could not get an ecosystem built up around it. Although Intel has reconfirmed its commitment, and don't forget we also have AMD behind it. So Migo may have less importance in the Nokia world, we will see, but people are still behind it.
Yeah, I think Dave makes a good point there. It's important to realize that Migo is about more than just Nokia, and Intel were expecting to see the first devices in sort of concept form at MWC. There is got to be a question mark over long-term health with one of the partners stepping back a little bit, but you know Nokia will be continuing to invest money in it. But I think in some ways the most shocking part of today's announcement was the step away from Migo by Nokia. In a sense, the changes to Symbian have been signposted for quite some time. You know, it was clear that Migo was going to replace it at the high end, and that would gradually seep down. I think with Symbian, it's perhaps, you know, been accelerated the pace of change with Windows Phone 7, and that's to do with perhaps Windows Phone 7 being a sort of lower down the tiers than Migo was always intended to be. But as David rightly points out, there is a Migo device coming, but in many ways, I think it's difficult to avoid seeing this as a damning indictment of Nokia's efforts with Migo. Now, where you put the blame is, of course, open to debate. But basically, what they've said and what Stephen Elop and his team have said is that Migo is not good enough for what we want to do. It's not going to help us recapture device leadership. It's not going to help us, you know, build innovation on top. And given that, you know, the amount of planning that had gone into Migo, the amount of investment, I think that's, you know, what shocked me most about today. Perhaps the writing's been on the wall. You know, there has been some commentary around how quickly it's taking to deliver Migo. And certainly, you know, there's been the delays initially, and, you know, it seems like we're going to get those again. And I think one of the most telling comments in this instance was that Stephen Elop said that some of the device planning, and particularly that means the sort of industrial design, but also the chipset choices that had been made for Migo devices would now be sort of put over onto Windows Phone devices. And so, you know, they're being pushed over, and that's very much a case of Windows Phones instead of Migo on those future planned devices, which is why it's actually going to happen rather more quickly. Effectively, some of the initial planning for such devices has already been done, and they're switching out Migo and putting Windows Phone in instead. And you know, a lot of people in Nokia, I think, are going to be very disappointed, because there's a lot of investment gone into it. It was seen as the sort of future hope for Nokia, and that has rather been snatched away today. And it, you know, leaves you rather shocked, to be honest, because you don't do that sort of thing unless something has gone, you know, pretty badly wrong. And I think it's probably a case that it just wasn't going to be ready. It needed another year, and Nokia don't have that year. you know, if it had been ready now, I don't think there would have been an issue, and whether there had been this dramatic switch is much more open to debate. But it's not ready now. And the sort of tacit acknowledgement is, if it's not ready now and it's late, can we be sure it's going to be ready in a year? And it's a bigger risk going with MeeGo than it is for going with Windows Phone. That's essentially what it comes down to.
Rafe.
And I'll just to finish off, I'll say, and David said it's sort of going back to the MIMO way of things, and I think that's right. You know, it's going back to being more of an experimental platform, but you do wonder a little bit whether that's sort of a stop to keep everybody happy, you know, so that Nokia doesn't bleed its engineering talent overnight. I think, to be fair, they probably will use it to explore sort of future device scenarios, and that might be things like tablets, but could also be something equally on wacky. And the implication I got from talking to a few people today was that, yes, we'll see one device this year, and we'll continue to see a cadence of a couple of devices running MeeGo a year, at least, you know, in the current planning.
Yeah, Riff, there's just something I've been meaning to kind of bring up with you as well, because it was in the press release, there was one thing that had me scratching my head, and there's probably other people who follow MeeGo might have been as well. The very first line where MeeGo is mentioned in the press release that came out at 7:30 GMT, and yes, we were up that early, was that MeeGo will become an open source project. And now, unless I'm going crazy, I thought MeeGo was open source.
Yes, it is open source. I mean, that's actually one of the big shifts from Nokia today, from sort of open source with Symbian MeeGo to something that's closed in a, you know, a licensing with Windows Phone and, you know, royalty payments. I guess we can talk about that later. But yes, I suspect that's probably mistranslation in marketing or press release speakies, and these things do sometimes occur like that. So, yeah, I mean, it is still open source, but I think it's probably going to end up being more open than it might have been before, because a lot of they'll be looking to get as much development in from the outside to sort of bolster some of the loss that will be inevitable when it's no longer sort of a mainstream Nokia platform, if you will.
We've got a lot of questions that have come in from people on Twitter. We've amalgamated some of them. We'll be able to credit names with some of them. Some of them we won't directly ask because we think we've already answered them. So, for example, you know, when people go shocked, amazed, curious, sad, hoping, what do you think? You know, this is what the podcast is for. Rafe, let me throw one to you. Developers. Steve Ballmer famously sang, "Developers, developers, developers." Nokia have said they were on a burning platform and chose to jump. It seems to me that burning platform was every single person that's invested time in Qt tied together and burned at the stake. Now, okay, that's high emotion. We'll talk about high emotion for the fans as well. But the developer story that Nokia's been pushing, which is, you know, Qt is what will get you going, it only stayed on Symbian. And now Symbian's going to drop down, and it is winding down. So what have Nokia done to their developer story? Have they sacrificed all their developers to make this move?
Well, I said that MeeGo was the sort of the element that surprised me. Shock. Actually, I think Qt is the most shocking one, because it was an asset. And you're right, they've effectively decided to severely downgrade it, I think. It's not gone altogether again. It's like Symbian. And I'll come back in a minute for that. The story will be they are not putting Qt onto Windows Phone. The reason for that is they didn't want to fragment it. And Seemly.com made the comment it wouldn't be honest about adopting that ecosystem if we try to do something with Qt in it. And I suspect this was probably the hardest decision for them to make. I think it's probably the right one, because if you do look at what Microsoft is good at, creating developer ecosystems is one thing they've done very successfully time and time again. I think a good example of that is there are 8,000 applications in the Windows marketplace at the moment. For a platform that has just a couple of million devices, that's rather impressive when you consider that OviStore in total has something around 30,000 applications and maybe 20,000 on Symbian. And when you consider 100 million Symbian devices sold in the last year, I think that's an order of magnitude difference. And so, you know, one of the things that Nokia are getting out of this is a pretty compelling developer story in one sense. However, they are throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I expect there's a lot of existing Nokia developers will be disappointed. Qt has, for very good reason, a lot of fans. It's very elegant. It's a clever piece of technology. But unfortunately, it didn't really fit in with the new strategy. I would just add a note of caution in that, again, like I said, Symbian remains a big market opportunity, 150 million device again. It will also be on MeeGo, so it's not disappearing altogether. And there was an interesting note where Elop said that we're going to look at Qt on the low-end device. That means Series 40 and a possible port to Series 40. They weren't making any announcements about that today, but there's a distinct possibility.
Right there. Yeah. David.
Yeah, I think I'd just like to, well, maybe pay a little tribute to Qt, because for the first time I've remembered saying name correctly.
All these years, just at the death is, oh, I've got it right. Don't.
Yeah. It is, as Riff said, this was the biggest shock of all, really, because it is such a shame that it has been downgraded. There's just a number of angles to explore this from. But was a lot of momentum building up between it. When Nokia and Intel came together with MAMO and Moblin to make MeeGo, Intel was using GTK, and they shifted over to use Qt because Nokia had that expertise that they could bring to the table. Canonical was adopting Qt, even though they used a GTK-based GNOME system in their netbook distribution. So there was a lot of momentum building up around the netbook, notebook, tablet space, and actually in this deal that Nokia has with Microsoft, Nokia actually have more influence with Microsoft over Windows Phone than any other OEM licensor. It's not an ordinary deal. Elop went to great pains to make that clear.
Yes, I think that's a good point, David. But frankly, you know, today has been a day of brutal judgments, and however good and however elegant Qt was, say, it didn't quite fit in with, you know, what was going forward. And I would imagine there are going to be a lot of disappointed developers out there. There'll be one saying, I don't want to do this. But ultimately, for developer story, it needs to be about what it adds to the platform. And for developers, essentially, it comes down to, you know, can I make money with this platform? And the contention is it will now be easier to do so. The developers' tools and the story on Windows Phone is actually pretty good. It is a departure, and so there will be a need to learn new skills. But the argument that Nokia would make is that the potential to make money, to build an ecosystem, and you know, this is what Elop emphasized again and again and again about, you know, together with Microsoft, creating a third ecosystem, building an ecosystem, building potential, and the developers will clearly be an important part of that. But I would have thought just in the short term, it does create a lot of disappointment, having, you know, said back in October that, you know, Qt would be the development platform for Nokia devices going forward. That has now changed. At the same time, I just, you know, emphasize what I said before, you know, Symbian isn't going away, so Qt will still be important. And as I say, 150 million devices should not be sniffed at. You know, that's bigger than most of the other platforms on their own in the last couple of years, with possibly Android being the exception there. So, you know, it's still going to be a valuable tool chain. I think it does actually, you know, raise some pretty interesting questions for the wider use of Qt on things like the desktop and in other platforms altogether. But I guess that's something we'll touch on in the future. And as I say, I think Qt was an unfortunate casualty, but it just didn't deliver quickly enough. And, you know, it comes back to that speed of execution thing. And, you know, Trolltech was bought quite a while ago, and it took Nokia just that little bit too long to integrate. If it could have been quicker, it might have been different. And I think that's something we'll probably come back to again and again when we rehash these technical arguments about should Nokia have gone it alone or should they partner. They weren't doing it quickly enough and elegantly enough on their own. Therefore, they had to change.
Okay, now, let's look at timing. Firstly, for this podcast, I mean, this is right after the announcement. Race is back from London. We're all trying to gather notes. So a lot of this is off the cuff, and a lot of the stuff that we would love to talk about, we need a little bit more time to research and go into depth. So do stay with the podcast, both All About Symbian and All About Me. You can also find us in iTunes as well. Dead easy to find us in the podcatcher applications. You find them on your handsets as well. But timing also of this deal, I mean, you know, there are long time scales here. We're going out to 2012 for some of these handsets. There are very short time scales. It's just, you know, the stock market price just, you know, doing its best impression of a yo-yo with not.
I think it's doing its best impression of jumping off a burning platform.
I think it is, yes. Okay. But I just to touch, I think that share price is because Nokia can't post any figures for 2011, which means that people who are in short, medium-term contracts don't know how profitable Nokia is going to be. And I think that's why it's dropping. I don't think it's specifically a reaction to Microsoft and Nokia together. I think it's the fact that Nokia are going to take so long to actually get up to full speed on this
agreed.
As well.
And let's not pretend otherwise. A change of this magnitude, a transition of this scale, brings with it a great deal of risk. Yes, the potential are great, but short term, you know, they have to get this transition absolutely right. Execution on both sides will be key.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that share price reaction is a reaction to that short-term risk.
Yeah. Steve?
Yeah, on that very subject. Now, given that this Nokia's Windows Phone hardware won't reliably and realistically appear until, we're saying, February, March 2012, that's a year away. And Nokia have been saying, well, they'll sell 150 million Symbian phones over the next few years. That was their word, few. We estimate maybe 2013 or so. Will that still happen? Given the fact that they've publicly said Symbian's going end of life, we're going to wind Symbian down, we're going to pull all the rugs out in terms of research and development, etc., etc. Certainly most of the people I'd have thought who would have bought Symbian 3 phones and most of the sort of mid to high tier phones, they'll have their ear to the ground. Won't they immediately think, well, I'm not buying Symbian then, I'm not buying a Nokia Symbian 3 device, and they'll go elsewhere? And won't that 150 million be rather a bit of an over-exaggeration? Haven't they just killed the market for mid to high tier Symbian phones for the next year or so? And wouldn't that get them into trouble, Rafe?
Can I just jump in here, Rafe, first, if you wouldn't mind? Because I don't think that we can have it both ways, Steve. Because most of the time, people argue that, and when I say we, I mean tech commentators, most people argue that Nokia, oh, they're just selling all those millions of smartphones, not because it says Symbian, not because it's Norris, it's because people just buy Nokia and they do that anyway and they don't care what's on it. People who make that argument cannot now make the argument you won't sell the Symbian smartphones because they've all been listening and watching the markets and think that their Symbian device is end of line. Those two viewpoints are completely incompatible. The actual answer, I think, is more in the middle. Networks will still buy Nokia because Nokia's customers, the main customers, the mobile telcos around the world, want these devices at the price points with the bullet point functionality that they need. They will still sell. There is an argument that devices like the N8 and the E7 are going to have a tough time, and I think I will give that to you, but I think that's also part of the ramp down as well. You know, the first Windows Phone Nokias that come out, those are going to be snapped up by people. So I think that bleeding effort will actually start at the high end, probably at the end of this year with limited runs of devices. But we can't have analysts going, they won't buy it because they've heard Symbian's end of line, when a week before they were saying, well, you know what? You know, nobody buys it because of Symbian. And we'll talk about all about Symbian's two-facedness later on in the podcast. Rafe, do you want to pick up as well?
Yeah, I mean, I agree really what you were saying, and
right,
this is about
the podcast game over. I like that one, David.
This is kind of the myth of the informed consumer, and actually this is why I think, you know, people who get, you know, dramatic around I'm never going to buy another Nokia device again, or I don't want to use Windows Phone, I'm sorry, but you know, this, you know, tribalism around operating systems is unwarranted for a lot of the time and really doesn't have the impact that people imagine it does in the market. You know, the reason that Microsoft wanted to partner with Nokia, make no mistake, Microsoft is getting just as much of Nokia out of this, and they would have been just as keen to make the deal, is because of Nokia's distribution chains and its sort of global reach into the market. People do go and buy a Nokia phone. Now, I will allow for the fact that, you know, at the top end, and we could talk about percentages, you know, just pulling one out of the air, 5%, but people are aware enough to know that, you know, Symbian has been given a sort of end of life timeline, if you like. But people still tend to buy devices based on what they want it to do. And the number of people that actually, say, transfer applications between the devices is vanishingly small. You know, by that argument, you could say no one would ever switch off iPhone to Android or vice versa, or BlackBerry or whatever. And clearly that has been happening. So I think actually it won't be a problem now. If you ask me this same question in 5 or 10 years time, say, I think it might be where, you know, there will be more significant ties within your own ecosystem, but right now I really don't see that being there. It's much, you know, you can make an argument at the high tier, it's certainly not true in the mid and the lower tiers. You know, people, you know, buy Nokia devices there, and I think even at the high tiers it's not going to have a really big impact. There may be something in there, but I would be reluctant to put too much emphasis on that And I think, you know, Nokia were very careful not to say when the first Windows Phone device would come out. The only comment that got made, as we said before, was that it will arrive in volume in 2012 across a range of price points. To me, that sounds awfully like they will be aiming to get a device out by the end of the year, but they don't want to commit themselves, given some of the past history with device shipment dates and things like that. Have they killed off sales? No, I don't think they have. And I think it's also sort of maybe a slight reaction to some of the things I've seen on, you know, some of the emails coming in, the Twitter's coming in saying, you know, I'll never buy another Nokia device. It's very easy to, you know, say that sort of thing, but I actually don't think that has that much of an impact. I still think the Nokia brand is stronger than any operating system or thing like that. And actually where the operating will be beneficial will be in the US market, where that brand recognition will probably do the sales, you know, be good for it. And the big sort of implication of this is that this will put Nokia back into the US market in a big way. Elsewhere, you know, people are going to still buy a Nokia device because it's not like they can go away and buy sort of something that's similar. You know, if it's between a Nokia and an Android device, it's probably still going to be a Nokia device, because what Nokia is probably most famous for, and this is most true in its you know, strongest markets, is device retention. And it has the highest retention rate for its customers of any device manufacturer. And we've talked in the past about that sort of familiarity coming up from Series 40 to Symbian. That's clearly going to be lost in this. But I think perhaps that benefit was starting to get smaller as we were seeing smartphones in the UX move further and further away from what we thought of the traditional feature phone. And that familiarity was starting to become almost a liability. I don't think it'd happen yet, but in a few years' time, it certainly would be. So that sort of ties into my sense that Nokia is getting the timing right on this. There's never going to be a great time to do this, but they're doing it before things become sort of too entrenched within its own ecosystem and before it's too late, which is perhaps a more important measure.
David.
Okay. Just on the timing thing, I mean, just to pick up on what Steve was saying earlier on about and shouldn't have said about Symbian winding down, I agree with that in principle, but the thing is, even if I hadn't said Symbian is going to wind down, but just say, well, we're going to keep on with Symbian, steady as she goes, and do Windows Phone 7, I think all the press would have had the same reaction. They would have thought that, well, really, Symbian's going. Although the one thing which I would have rather they'd have done today, and it's the same sin that Nokia always commits, is talk about something that they're going to do way, way, way off in the future. So we're all sitting around looking at our watches and thinking, oh, have you done it yet? And Nokia says, no, we'll do it in a bit.
2012.
Yeah.
Can I come back immediately on that, David,
okay,
and say, how do you keep something like this secret? Impossible.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it got this far without something more leaking out. And in a sense, it did leak out, because there have been all sorts of rumours floating around about it. No one really accurately calling it completely.
Yeah, but I think leaks are more tantalising and exciting than press conferences.
In this instance, they may have been able to keep it under wrap for a bit longer, but then it would have started coming out. And that kind of slow, gradual leak would have been far more damaging than sort of this certain cutoff point. And I think what I, in one sense, admire most about this, with reflection, is actually this is pretty brutally savage in some sense. They're looking to transition as quickly as possible. And that's, you know, the good thing to do. If you were going to make a change this dramatic, you should not be half-hearted about it. You need to go for it absolutely 100%. And yes, in an ideal world, you'd only announce it once you had the first devices ready to go. But given the number of people who would be involved in this, and that's both in Nokia and Microsoft, but also in all the partners, you know, you have to talk to the silicon vendors, everyone in the supply chain. It's not something you could keep under wraps, and it's not an ideal scenario. And I think it is perhaps worth reminding people that this is was a financial and analyst event. This was not a consumer event. This is not something they'll be expecting their consumers to pick up on. Of course, you know, all the interested people were following it along on the web, but that represents a tiny, tiny proportion of Nokia's customer base of, you know, 1.1 billion people. I would imagine the number of people following this closely, numbers in the hundreds of thousands, maybe 1 million at most. And, you know, that's 0.01% of the customer base.
Well, just going back to what I was saying quickly, I think what would have made today a lot more exciting and maybe even more reassuring in a way is if they said they was already working on Nokia Windows handsets, is if he actually could have released the device today as well. I would have liked to have seen that.
I think it was just too early days for that. I mean, if you look at when ELOP came in, the chances are they started talking about this before Christmas, which is why I suspect a device will make it out in 2011, but it will be a relatively close thing. And I think it's important that they don't do it too early when it's not ready and incomplete. And ELOP, you know, talked about this in the last earnings call. It's all about great products. And he said it again today, you know, it's all about great products. And that means you have to release it only when it's ready, not when it's convenient.
And you're going to now have Nokia developers getting their hands on Windows Phone 7 and turning it into Windows Phone 8, let's just assume on the name. Windows Phone 7 is getting a big update in March, so for a start, you wouldn't want to launch before that in any case. And
yeah. And you're making a great point there.
Two in one podcast.
Immediately, people are going Windows Phone 7. It is going to have, you know, 9 months more development in it of Microsoft, and you know they can do big things in 9 months. If you then combine in Nokia's expertise as well, that means we'll have a very different looking platform. Well, I shouldn't say different looking. I should say there's, you know, going to be many hundreds, even thousands of man years of development time will have gone into that before we see the first Nokia Windows Phone devices. And I'm saying Windows Phone very deliberately because it will be at least one or two updates in the Windows Phone 7 cycle and possibly even further.
And the other thing, David, is Stephen Elop could not do things by half. Today was the day when he was rolling dice. You know, Nokia's decision was, are these dice going to come up 2, 3, 4, 5, or 9, 10, 11, 12? One of those is Microsoft, one of those is Android. He had to choose one side. There is still a big gap in the middle, 6, 7, 8, that he has to navigate through. That's the tough bit. That's, I think, why the share price has dropped. But he's made the decision, and when you make a decision, the key in leadership is you follow it right through. You have no second thoughts. You don't have half-hearted. You have a plan. You implement it 100%. And if you said, and you know, we're kind of keeping Symbian in the background, that's not 100%. The markets would not have liked that. And Nokia really need to get a hold of markets, especially, I think, in the American market, which is where this is taken through. Steve, you've been collecting a couple of questions. What's been one of the more popular ones that's been coming through?
Well, the big one, and I guess we need to come to the most common question of all is, which is, what's going to happen to allaboutsymbian.com? Are we going to rename it? Which I guess Rafe can answer before we finish the podcast.
We're watching the clock. Let's take three more from the readers then.
We may only have time for one, because this is quite a biggie, if I just may go for it. What's going to happen to Ovi? And just to before Rafe leaps in, they did say in the press release today that... first of all, no mention of Ovi. The word Ovi, O-V-I, was not mentioned anywhere, as far as I can see. They did say, not to talk about Nokia Maps being, at, quote, at the heart of key Microsoft assets, like Bing and AdCenter, which doesn't sound terribly inspiring, but one has to assume that Nokia Maps and the Navtech Maps will all get rolled into a joint Microsoft-Nokia mapping solution, which is also tied in with local search and, as they say, advertising. Also, the Ovi store, no mention of that. They just said that Nokia's, quote, application and content store is to be, quote, integrated into the Microsoft marketplace. It does sound like Ovi itself has been shown the door, Rafe.
Nice one.
I think the reason for some of the lack of clarity here is it may not have been a final decision. I actually think Ovi will remain, and there will be this Ovi portal will remain, and we will see Ovi services. But obviously on these devices, we are going to see Microsoft services as well, in terms of things like Bing, but also Xbox. Music will be an interesting one to see how that breaks down. But at this point, from some of the graphics that were put up, the slides that went up, you know, it was Ovi Maps and Ovi Store were still being referred to. You know, it is early days in the agreement how this is all going to work out. So I think actually Ovi will be retained, but, you know, that is, of course, subject to change. But it does make an important point. You know, so far we've been talking about it's Nokia going Windows Phone, you know, the licensing. And it's worth pointing out that for Microsoft, Windows Phone is a royalty-bearing product, i.e. Nokia will pay to use it. However, you know, there are pains to say many times that this is not a typical OEM relationship. You know, this isn't just Nokia licensing Windows Phone. There's a lot going back the other way. The most obvious example of that is Maps, and this is really all about Navtech asset. And just going to show what a good purchase it was. I mean, it was expensive, but it's given them real leverage here. But it's also, you know, about the scale of Nokia in terms of reaching the customer base and what could, that could then do when combined with Microsoft's advertising platform, for example. And we all know that in technology, there's, you know, two really strong underlying themes that has been for the last few years and continue into the future. And that's location or local and mobile. And in one sense, Nokia bring those two incredibly strong assets to Microsoft. And so they will be giving Microsoft just as much. And, you know, we see that in, we'll see something like, I don't know, Bing Maps powered by Nokia or similar. Right. And I think it's easy to underestimate the importance of those, because I think they could have very significant revenue bearing opportunities. And yes, there's going to be this licensing fees. I suspect Nokia's got very generous terms from Microsoft. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see, you know, very significant drops. And another part of that is, you know, they have got a joint partnership that they're going to be developing Windows Phone in partnership with Microsoft, you know, going beyond any typical OEM relationship you know, Microsoft has usually had. And I think that marks just how important this is for both companies.
Right then, Rafe, we've got a couple of questions to go through from the viewers, yep. And then we've got some more. So let's go for quickies. Anything more than 10 seconds and I will cut you off.
Okay.
I'm feeling brave. I've got two good things in this podcast. So briefly, will Windows Phone be backported to N8 or E7? Yes or no? Do we
no.
know? No. Right then. I'd definitely read Rafe Banford and the other AES writers if they'd covered other platforms. They know their phones. Not a question. That's from Gabe UK. Just want to say thank you very much, Gabe. We appreciate it. Here's one for you. David, you can have this one. Mubarak or Nokia?
Oh, Nokia. It's been around longer.
Does it matter if you love or hate the news? Have you got to admit that Nokia is just exciting again?
Everyone's okay. talking about it, particularly in the Americas. The whole mobile industry, the conversation has suddenly changed. This yeah. is industry moving. Yes, it's very exciting.
Rafe, from Lekovadovlasko, I think he's singing for Azerbaijan in Eurovision this year. If they do it right, will Nokia and Microsoft rule the world in a year?
In a year, no. Looking further ahead, there will be two big combines. It will be Microsoft Nokia versus Google Samsung with sort of two players in a more vertical role, and that's going to be RIM and Apple, and WebOS is kind of the wild card out there.
Okay. Steve, I feel sorry for the Nokia staff. Is this an insane and suicidal pattern for Nokia? From Gaza D.
It's not insane. It's not necessarily suicidal. I do feel incredibly sad for the people who will end up probably losing their jobs or having to change jobs as a result of this. And of course, all the people in the community around All About Symbian, there will undoubtedly be some changes over the next 1 to 2 to 3 years. But bear with us. We will find stuff for you to read, and we will stay relevant whatever happens.
Yes, that's right, Steve. There will be job losses, and that's always going to be sad when you have a change of this scale. It is, you know, inevitable, but I also think the opportunities that this brings could be just as meaningful.
Okay. David, will Mego take over from Windows on tablets and netbooks?
It could. I think there's an interesting possibility there, and but I didn't say Mego would be phones only, so watch for space. It could happen.
Steve, from Spencer Cross, why not choose WebOS?
Because WebOS is being handled by HP now, and they seem to have full control of it. I think that would be a mistake to go up against HP.
Okay, Rafe, this bit, in case you haven't noticed, guys, I've not scripted. They're not quite sure what I'm calling out now. So, Rafe, will Nokia have anticipated the overwhelmingly negative reaction online from Lakesleep?
Well, I wouldn't say the reaction is overwhelmingly negative. It will depend where you look. If you look at the Americans, particularly Windows Phone sites, you're probably going to see a lot of positive information, but I don't doubt that Nokia realise that this is going to create a certain amount of turbulence amongst their fans, and that's one of the things that they have to handle in the transition. But you know, people have loyalties that will vary all the time, and I would emphasise again that the sort of amount of discussion that goes online about this is only a very small portion of their actual customer base. I'm not saying it's not important, but you know,
David, should we curse Stephen Eel up or congratulate him?
The jury's out.
Oh!
I think you have to congratulate him. Whether it's a courageous decision, Minister, or whether it's an inspired decision remains to be seen. But
Rafe, did you just quote from Yes Minister?
I did just quote from Yes Minister. You can't say that Nokia could continue as before, they were in dark times. You only need to look at the Q4 results. Something had to be done. I do not envy Steve Elop in his job. He's had to make a very difficult decision. But what he has done is made it very clearly, very decisively. And now it's going to be up to him to make sure he implements, executes that properly. So I think he should be applauded
20 seconds.
For his courageous.
Steve, you got the applaud demo first. Steve, can we trust Microsoft and Nokia to stay European?
I think that Nokia will remain Finnish. They still make a huge number of mobile phones each year. And their big mobile phone division is getting bigger, according to the charts they showed today. It's not all about smartphones. Certainly, I think maybe the centre of their smartphone production in terms of Windows Phone will certainly perhaps centre in Silicon Valley. But they're Finns. They'll stay Finn on this. They'll stay cold.
I think we will feel a slight difference in the culture, though, because I think there is a more American Silicon Valley influence coming in there. So, I mean, I think the internal culture is going to change slightly, at least.
I think it'll actually change pretty majorly. I mean, this is going away from Symbian being, you know, a software and hardware company combined to partner with another company for software, and that will inevitably bring in outside influence. You look at the new leadership team, which is a change from the sort of group executive board, and you see that there's more UK and US influence in there. Really interesting to see Joe Harlow, for example, promoted from the head of Symbian smartphones to the head of smart devices in general. There's been other shuffling, which you can see on the site as well. So there will be a big cultural change here. You know, make no mistake, you know, this will change the sort of structure and the way that Nokia operates in a cultural terms, I think, in quite a dramatic way over the next few years.
Okay, we have a question here from Charles Arthur. Is it true that we only have to change a one-line rewrite in Apache to make All About Symbian all about WindowsPhone.com? Charles Arthur at The Guardian.
Well, yes, technically that is true. I think it's probably worth answering here the question we've had come up a couple of times.
Would you like more than 20 seconds?
I would like more than 20 seconds for this particular. But what happens to All About Symbian and All About Migo? Well, the truth is, on both of those sites, is we've been writing about Nokia, and that won't change. And yes, we will have to move the branding to move with the times. But if Nokia is going through a transition, so will we. The exact form and shape that takes, you know, we'll talk about that and we'll announce that when we're ready to do so. But you can rest assured that if you want to follow Nokia, keep following us, and we'll remain the premier destination for anyone who's interested in finding out more information, analysis, or reviews of Symbian's smartphone, of Nokia's smartphone devices. Whoops, Freudian slip, perhaps. No. Premier destination, if you're interested in finding out about what Nokia's up to, its devices, it will continue to be all about.
Finally, because it's been a fun day, I have to say, Rafe, a question directly for you, but I suppose also for the rest of the team, so we can all have a go at this one before we say goodbye. Araquadia actually quotes this, but it is the sentiment that's popped up and true. Tell us your true opinion about the move in the podcast, or are you going to do an about turn on your opinions of Symbian?
Well, the thing is, at the moment, it's quite hard to give an immediate reaction because I'm still digesting it. But you have to look at it and say the people who made this decision in Nokia have access to better information than we do. And so to a certain extent, you have to say, well, we follow what Nokia does. My opinion of it personally is, as I said before, I think from a technical point of view, it could have gone either way. As I say, it's the Nokia doing it on their own road or partnering. And if it was partnering, it had to be with Microsoft. But I'm starting to be of the opinion that they really had very little choice at this point in time. And so it then became about how can you do it in the most effective manner. And the same will be true in the transition ahead. It doesn't take away any of my fondness for Symbian or any of the preceding history or preceding views. But there's a certain amount where you have to face what the future is going to be about. And that's what we're sort of doing today. But we're going to talk and talk about this one and still digesting it. And as we've sort of already said, the actual impact of this in terms of devices and consumers isn't going to be felt for, you know, quite a significant time period.
Yeah, and I'd just like to put my tuppence in here as well. I mean, like Riff said earlier on, there's absolutely no need to be tribal about phone operating systems. I mean, for instance, I mean, the last couple of months, I mean, I got a Nexus One at Christmas and I'm enjoying using it. However, I think that now you tell us. Yeah. The perception in the market of Symbian has been awful. And I think there's a saying in life and politics that if you say something false enough times, it becomes true. And I've said this before on All About Symbian, and I stick to it. I think the majority of the press, particularly the American press, And I will say this hand on heart, that I think a lot of the press out there have behaved with Symbian. It's like a kid at Christmas refusing to eat sprouts. And sprouts are actually quite nice.
Right, okay, finishing on a sprouts analogy, that's impressive. Well, it's the All About Symbian. This has been the All About Symbian and the All About Amigo podcast. Next year, we will be calling it the All About Brian podcast, just to cover the bases so we don't have to go through the URL name change again. It only remains for me to say and ask for the final thoughts. First of all, David, do you want to leave the sprouts as your final thought?
Yes.
Okay, right then. Thank you also very much to Steve Litchfield with his final thoughts.
And just surfing through calendar on my HTC HD7 Windows 7 phone in my hand, I've scheduled in the continuing review of the Nokia E7. It's business as usual in the short term. Watch out for review part two coming soon.
It's also thank you very much to the well-travelled and at least he can take a joke far better than Ruskin 147, Rafe Blandford.
Yeah, well, it's goodbye from me as well, but I would just leave you with the thought that there is much to come, much to still digest from this, and the impacts of today will be far-reaching, and we'll be talking about them, I suspect, for months and years to come.
Which at least keeps us in podcast and written material. And there's also myself, Ewan Spence, who has been listening to a very interesting audiobook on his Zune HD on the trip into the studio and getting ready to buy my tickets for MWC, which I've had to hand to Rafe. And it goes a little bit like this. You know, once upon a time, I picked up a phone. I bought it 10 years ago, and it was called the Nokia 7650. Interestingly enough, if I pick it up today, the operating system is discontinued because it's Symbian Series 6001. The UI has changed. I need to put a new battery in it. It doesn't work brilliantly on 3G networks, but you know what? It still works. The phone in your pocket is software. It is present and correct. Yes, the future is very, very interesting, and we love to write about the future, but right now what you have in your pocket has not been affected one little bit by any of the news today. Your phone does what you want it to do, and all of these companies want your phone to do what you want it to do in the future going forward. We just have a flavor that we like, and we're going to add some sprouts onto the top of it. So we're going to have the E7 review coming up next week. We're going to have David looking more in depth in Migo and QT. I'm going to probably be looking at some fantastic games, and Rafe is going to be sending himself in Barcelona at MWC trying to find a certain Bill Gates so he can shake his hand. There we go. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Ewan Spence, and this has been your All About Symbian, All About Migo podcast on February the 11th, a day which will go down in infamy. And no, I'm not doing a carry-on joke.